From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we're going to be talking about trends with George Uhr. Here's what's happening. The plot thickens. Authorities have apparently spotted two objects in the Indian Ocean that are possibly, and I'm going to put that in quotations, related to the search for the missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. One of the objects is about 70-plus feet long. That's pretty big. Now, the announcement was made just a few moments ago by the Australian Prime Minister, Tony Abbott. Planes are going in that area now. As a matter of fact, a U.S. Orion, which is an anti-submarine plane, should be there very soon to be able to look for this possible wreckage at all. Everybody is saying, well, we just don't know what it is. We need to find it. If it happens to be the wreckage from the Malaysian 370, the big then question will be, it doesn't seem to be in the area where the plane was reportedly going when it was pinging satellites. So we'll just keep monitoring this situation for you tonight. The FBI, by the way, joining forces with Malaysian authorities in analyzing deleted data on a flight simulator belonging to the pilot of this missing plane as well. And there is an expert out there who believes it's possible, his name is Rick Matthews, of the National Center for Security and Preparedness at the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs. He says that it is possible that the missing flight is being held for ransom by a group of individuals, maybe including people from the flight crew. Again, all of this information is coming in rapidly. Nobody really knows what's going on. We will monitor this situation as well. They're just going to get the wreckage, and if they find it, they're going to have to pull it, look at it, and see if it's part of that plane. The shrapnel generated by small space rocks that periodically hit the moon may pose a greater risk to lunar missions now than previously believed. A number of countries have stated that their plans to send robotic and crewed missions to the lunar surface in the coming decades could be a problem. Apparently, a relatively small impact on the moon last year sent hundreds of pieces of rock debris out of the crater, traveling at the speed of a shotgun blast, spraying small rocks all over the place, so they're concerned about that. Cramming in extra hours of sleep may not make up for those lost pulling all-nighters, according to new research. The damage may already be done. Brain damage, that is, according to a neuroscientist, Sigrid Vesey from the University of Pennsylvania. She says the widely held idea that you can pay back a sizable sleep debt with long naps, well, seems to be a myth. She said long-term sleep deprivation saps the brain of power even after days of recovery, and it could be a sign of a lasting brain injury. Let's check in with Neil Slade, author of Brain Tuning. Neil, what do you think of this study?
Well, it's very interesting. We've known for many years that the brain cleans itself of certain toxins and waste products that you accumulate during normal waking use. And all kinds of studies have shown how important sleep is. Now, previous studies, if you go back to 2007, showed damage to the hippocampus, which is related to short-term memory. So if you lose sleep, you lose this ability for short-term memory. So what they did at the University of Pennsylvania recently is they came up with a mouse model. Now, you have to keep in mind, they didn't test humans, but this is a sort of a preliminary study to see what kind of damage would occur to a mammal's brain. And what they found was that there was a loss of neurons in the brainstem, the part of the brain that is responsible for alertness and cognition. And when they replicated the type of sleep loss that someone might have that does like a steady night shift where they're only getting a few nights of sleep each night, what that does is changes the brain chemistry, and a large portion of these neurons in the brainstem simply die off. And so they, although they haven't said this is exactly what happens in human beings, that's the next thing that they're going to look into to see if this it's a similar thing happens in human beings.
Okay, Neil, thank you so much for that. Just get some sleep. That's the bottom line. The Federal Reserve will probably end its massive bond buying program this fall. They're buying about $75 billion worth of bonds a month. Could start raising interest rates, they say, around 6 months later. We haven't seen that in a long time. And, of course, Janet Yellen, the Fed chairperson, who made this comment, sent stocks and bonds tumbling. The United States has announced that it would give up the last vestige of control that it still exerts over the Internet and would hand over control for DNS maintenance and the assignment of the new global domains to the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. This is a surprising move, but what the heck does it all mean? Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein, who is an expert on the Internet. What does it mean, Lauren?
Yeah, well, we've talked about this kind of Internet governance area a number of times in the past, and it's really complicated. And when you look into the details of this announcement that came out of NTIA, which is the part of the government that has been contracting with ICANN for this kind of name and certain related number operations for the Internet, for the root servers of the domain name system, the DNS, it makes for very interesting reading, because they don't actually say that ICANN is going to continue with this. Actually, they're saying that the contract won't be renewed the way it has been up till now. They're saying that they want to see an organization created, which may turn out to be ICANN, because they certainly have the head start on this. And they put a number of interesting restrictions on it. They said, for example, essentially, that governmental and intergovernmental organizations need not apply. And when you read between the lines, what they're really saying there is no Russia, no China, no UN, ITU. That's a good set of restrictions. I mean, we've talked in the past.
Sure.
We do not want the UN or the ITU within a parsec of this kind of issue. On the other hand, it's not at all clear what we're actually going to get, from something like this, because it's really a blank slate. And so there are a lot of concerns that in the political atmosphere that we have now, it's so toxic that it's going to turn into a real battle royale among different countries that have different points of view on this. There are countries that want to basically burn into the rules of the Internet the right to do censorship, for example. That's true. And there's countries that want to go, in other directions. Making this even more complicated is that if we don't do anything at all, various countries have been threatening to break off on their own anyway, create their own top-level domains, change the addresses that they're using, and that could result in network fragmentation. Then you have these little balkanized internets that can't talk to each other either well or at all, and then we're in an even worse place. So exactly, this is the beginning of the process. The only thing we can try to really do is attempt to keep politics out of this. It's going to be in there anyway. I think there are hearings that are going to be starting in Congress early next month. But we have to remember that this is primarily a technical policy issue, and the more politics that gets into it, the worse we're
sure.
probably going to be for it.
But if they hand over the Internet gauntlet, is it conceivable that some organization, some group, some other country could literally shut down the Internet?
You can't shut down the Internet, but you can certainly mess up parts of it. I mean, there's various ways that can be done. Domain names are one thing, addresses are another, BGP routing, all kinds of things like that. And another part of the problem is, there's an evolution of these things. So even if we get an organization that we believe is going to handle this well now, we have to worry about where we're going to be 10 years from now. So it's really a giant question mark. This is something people really have to pay attention to. On the other hand, you don't want to get, all caught up in some of the more, explosive things that you're hearing. This is a complicated technical matter. It has to be handled logically and methodically. And if we don't do it that way, we're probably going to regret it.
Okay, Lauren, thank you so much. Lauren's website, you find it on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Listen to this story. A California toddler, little boy, survives a three-story fall. He's saved by a couple. They were moving into a new home. They had a mattress with them outside. They tossed the mattress under the boy before he plunged to the ground, and he's okay. What an incredible story. This little kid is going to be one of the luckiest kids ever when he grows up. So we're going to bring in Tony Davidson in a moment, author of Luck, Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds, just to find out what this little kid is going to go through in life and how you can change some of your luck. Tony's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Tony Davidson is an attorney, long studied luck and its effect on risk-taking. He has appeared on True TV with his research on luck, of course, and we know him very well as the author of Luck, Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds. Tony, I wanted to get your reaction first before we really talk about luck. This little toddler that gets saved by a couple who happens to have a mattress underneath him. I mean, what kind of luck is this kid going to grow up with?
Well, you know, George, it's a pleasure being back on your show again. And for me, this story is a win-win-win situation.
I love it.
Let's look at the toddler. You've asked me in prior shows, are some children born luckier than others?
Mm-hmm.
This one certainly was and is. And the deal is, with the toddler, we can look at the luck in terms of his life was protected. And we don't know in the future if he'll go on to become a doctor who will save lives, or an astronomer who will discover new planets. But what we do know tonight is that he'll be able to fulfill his life's destiny because of this situation, because of the incredible luck of the different random events coming together to save his life. The other part of the story is the couple who saved him.
Yeah.
They are reported as having said to the media that we were lucky to be there. And in thinking about that, what does that mean, we were lucky to be there? They were able to help this child. And how lucky is that for them, that they were able to offer their lives to help him and in a way get luck themselves through the situation?
Not only being there at the right time, Tony, but to have a mattress with them. Because I don't think they could have broken a three-story fall with their bodies or hands. Everybody would have gotten hurt on that one. They happened. Well, they had a mattress.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was thinking the name of the book that I co-authored with Barry Dalnick is Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, what are the odds that somebody was moving out of the apartment that day at that particular time, had the mattress there, saw the child crawling around on the window, and were able to put the mattress under the window and save the child?
Yeah. Just
I mean, put all those random factors together, and I think it would be difficult to calculate the odds, but, you know, people don't move out of apartment complexes every single day. And certainly the sequence of events that had to happen to bring that all together, big odds on that one.
Tony, how close is luck related to fate?
Well, you know, I have always maintained that luck is something that can be understood so that we don't necessarily take a fatalistic view of luck, like whatever happens, if I have luck, I have it. If I don't, I don't. Because for me, if you look at luck in terms of fate, then it's completely out of our control. And while we can't completely control luck, I firmly believe that we can understand it. And I think part of the understanding goes back to the story, because at the outset, when I said it's a win-win-win, it was a win for the toddler, it was a win for the couple, and I think it's also a win for anybody reading the story or listening to the story for the first time on your show tonight, that we're reminded that even though life is precarious, it's a precious gift.
Sure is.
And so to take the time to understand what luck is as an aspect of the personality helps you fulfill your life destiny and protect that precious gift. I mean, essentially, we are all the protectors of our lives. And part of that is to fulfill our life destiny.
I'll tell you who else is lucky in this case, Tony. The parents of the little toddler, because they could have been in serious trouble had something serious happened to that little kid when he fell out.
Absolutely.
My gosh. It's amazing how this happens. I guess the couple could be considered angels too, couldn't they?
I do, you know, even though I think there's a rational approach to luck where you can, and we can get into this a little bit if you want, there's a, certainly an intellectual aspect of luck where you can figure out what it means to you in your particular life. But I've always said that there's an emotional and a force of nature aspect to luck that is emotive and not necessarily rational. And so the idea that there are guardian angels or protectors in certain situations and in certain lives, I think probably in some mystical and magical way may play a role in situations like this.
When you were on with me some time ago when we were talking about luck, understanding luck and improving the odds, what got you into that area, Tony?
Well, it's again, it's like, you know, anybody's life is a complicated set of factors, but the heart of it is, in my view, American society today looks at luck in terms of lotteries, casinos, gambling, scratch-off, money.
Yes.
If they have money, they're lucky. If they don't have money, they're not. And it doesn't really go deeper than that. And what got me into this was, in part, the knowledge that there's got to be something more to luck than just chasing money. And so what I did was I spent years researching what luck meant historically. And part of our book goes, it describes in detail the chronology and the evolution of luck throughout society and bringing it together into modern times. And the conclusion was that there are so many facets of luck so deep in history where money was not the primary concern. It deals with health and relationships and love and, you know, all different aspects of a full life. It deals with why we love to play games and why we engage in sports and are thrilled by magical shots, half-court shots, buzzer beaters in March Madness and all of that. All of that is dealing with luck, and so there's so much more to it than simply money. And the conclusion was that it's in everybody's life if we just step back and say, what does it mean to each of us? What is luck to me? And once you find that, once you bring that into your personality and you come to terms with it, then you're finding out who you are. And finding out who you are is the gift of life.
Now, when you talk about luck and then the lack of luck, whatever happened to those poor passengers aboard the Malaysian plane? No matter what, whether it's, you know, been hijacked or has gone down in the sea, they had bad luck, Tony. They had bad luck.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, this is one of those aspects of luck that is not obviously controllable. Things happen. But for me, in thinking about the Malaysian era, the story of what's going on with the Malaysian Airlines, with this additional story of the toddler in Burbank, California, mm-hmm. what it says to me is in conjunction is that this is the counterposition of both the precariousness of life and the preciousness of
yes,
life.
Yes, exactly.
The timing of the, you know, this story of the child being saved is remarkable to me in that while we're so fixed on the, you know, the story of the airline and we're all wondering what's going to happen with it and what the result is, and we're all contemplating this precarious nature of life. At the same time, we have a story which reminds us, you know what, it's a beautiful life too. We have, you know, this miracle of life at the same time. And the two stories coming together at the same time, to me is special, you know, that it really brings forth this life, which is filled with miracles, and at times it can have disasters.
Okay, well, stay with us, Tony. We're going to come back with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take some phone calls, and perhaps you might be able to share your story with us about something lucky that happened to you. I'll continue to monitor the situation with the Malaysian plane, Flight 370. With any updates there, they have spotted some degree about 2,500 kilometers from Australia. So whatever this debris may be, it's kind of drifted over that way. And one of the objects about 70-plus feet long. And again, they do not know if it's from that jet. We'll be back. Well, if you have a smartphone and you live in Canada, you can get our apps now. Is that exciting? And they're free. Simply go to the highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com and download the information and pick it up for your iPhone or for your Android. If you're in Canada, of course, if you're in the States, you can already do this. But this is for those of you in Canada. Pick up the apps. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Tony Davidson, author of Luck, Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds, that he wrote with Barry Dolnick. And we're taking your phone calls and your stories as we react to this incredible story. A California little boy survives a three-story fall, saved by a couple. They happen to have their box spring mattress with them, and they held it under, and the kid plopped right down on it. Pretty darn lucky, I would say. I guess history will prove how lucky this little kid will become in the future, Tony, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly for his individual life, as I said, we don't know whose life he's going to touch in the future. But we can also look at it and say that as of right now, they're clearly the couple who saved him, his parents, and we are, you know, feel luckier that and more in touch with the precious gift of life that he's reminded us of. I think he's touched all our lives now, or certainly everyone that's aware of the story.
What are the odds of them being there, having this box spring mattress, all this happening? What are the odds? Astronomical?
I think they're really high. I mean, I think if you look at the number of people that move out of an apartment in a given year, I don't know how many units are in the building, but you'd have to calculate how many units are in the building, how often people moved, when they moved on a particular day. Was it, you know, a Sunday, which is kind of an unusual day to move, right? You don't have usually get movers on a Sunday, and then you factor in that they were there, that they were close enough to this child, that they spotted him, that they were able to react quickly enough. You put all those factors together and calculate the odds. They're high odds, definitely.
To the phones we go. You ready?
Which is why I think it was a top story, you know?
You got it. Let's go to Bob in Los Angeles to get things going for us. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I was working at traffic control at a triathlon in the Los Angeles, and the bicyclists were approaching the intersection where I was at, and this one forlorn lady thought she was going to walk in front of them all and commit Harry Carey, I guess. But I just happened to notice her at the last section, and I grabbed hold of her and pulled her out of the lane. There was just about 75 bicyclists that had good luck that night.
Yeah,
that
absolutely. Accident. I love that. Hey, Bob, have you been lucky yourself in some kind of episode?
Well, it's something I used to fly as a private pilot. I had some landing issues where I had to correct by, for lack of experience, I had to correct by my own intuition, you know, so something like that, yes.
That's the way to do it. Hey, thanks for that story. Tony, do we create our own luck? We've talked about this before, but, I mean, if somebody's negative, are they going to get lucky or not?
Well, I certainly think the power of positive thinking facilitates getting in touch with luck. But I also feel at the same time that, for me, the image is kind of like, you know, if you want to get a ladder from your life, from the ground to get to luck, you got to have some rungs on that ladder to get there. And that was one of the motivations for writing the book, Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds, was to give specific tools of how to understand luck in your life. So, yes, positive thinking, feeling good about yourself, all of those things create an atmosphere for generating luck in your life. But you need something intellectual, too. You need something to really understand it and get a hold of it, and there you need the specific tools.
Let's go to John in St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, George and
Tony.
Yes, they're Tony. The biggest thing of serendipity or whatever you want to call it that happened in my life was there was a plane crash in Buffalo years back in Williamsville where there was one guy killed on the ground from this plane crash.
Yeah.
And he turned out to be my cousin.
Oh, boy.
And that was too close. He was a very successful man too. I mean, you know, he had a great career going. He was a really successful chemist, and he died in that plane crash. And it was really crazy. You know, I mean, one guy on the ground. But that was definitely luck. I mean, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I guess you could have bad luck too.
Yeah, right. I mean, some people say, well, you know, God's going to take you when it's your time, you know. And
he was on the ground when the plane, did it hit him? What happened?
Yeah, it hit his house.
Oh.
And he was the guy, and his family was gone. His wife and his kids were out of the house.
Thank God. They were the lucky ones.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, in a sense, yeah, they were the positive lucky ones.
Exactly. Thanks for that story. So what about bad luck, Tony, as opposed to good luck?
Well, basically, our research and our book focuses on good luck because there's tons of material on getting the positive forces in your life. And
yes,
that's
I would
luck.
Prefer that, too.
I think, nevertheless, having said that, the flip side is, of course, there's going to be, as you know, I said earlier, there's going to be miracles and there's going to be potential disasters. But I think, for me, the best way to deal with situations that are bad luck are to try to figure out if you can bring forth something good out of that happened, and where we learn from that and where we go on and try to make something positive out of that, even though it may be bad.
Let's go to our first-time caller, James Holland, Michigan. Hey, James, thanks for calling. I'm glad you got in.
Yeah, hi, George. Thanks.
Sure.
I had a story about luck, and it's probably the craziest thing that ever happened to me.
Okay.
Right before I started my senior year in high school, I made a trip to one state over to Wisconsin, and I golfed with my dad. And when I was young, my parents had divorced, and you know, it was probably the third time I'd seen him since we moved. And fast forward from that to end of senior year, we had an overnight senior party where they have raffle prizes, and you get a bracelet with a number on it, and you could see all the prizes, and the golf bag full of clubs was sitting there. And I told everybody that I wanted to win that, but it was all down to a draw at the end of the night. And when the golf clubs came up, after all the TVs and stereos and other things, you know, I stood up and I looked around at the whole room, this whole, you know, graduating class for everybody, you know, hoping to win these golf clubs. And, you know, I just thought about it, and they read my number, and I got to go up there and get the golf clubs.
That's the lucky time. I remember a time for me, Tony, when I was in my first year of college, my dad had given me his old Mercury. So it was my car, and that was it was like a little tank. And I'm driving on the freeway. This is in Detroit. I go up the hill of the freeway and down. It had been raining. I hydroplaned. And, I mean, I could not control that car. I went slamming into the car. They were all stopped in front of me. I smashed right into it, bounced off the steering wheel. The car was a total wreck. And I walked out of it. I mean, I should have been killed. That was a lucky moment for me.
Amazing.
West of the Rockies, John in Anchorage, Alaska. Go for it, John. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Are you there?
Yep.
Hello, George. How you doing? I've been a long-time listener ever since Art Bell was on the show.
You've been out with us a long time, John. Thank you.
A very long time. I was calling because, you know, I heard the story about the little boy that you were talking about. You know, that young man's quite lucky.
He sure is.
Hey, you know, I only had luck once in my life, and that was at a casino.
What happened?
But a lady from the Northern California took me to a casino, and she gave me a bill to go play some video machines.
Mm-hmm.
And, fortunately, I did pretty good. I won $7,000 that
wow.
night.
In video you know, poker? Good for you.
That was the only time I ever done any good luck.
Well, John, I'm sure you've had some other good luck in your life, right?
Events,
well,
yeah.
I don't think so.
Really?
You know, the thing is that what I love about luck is that there's so many of these specific stories that you can just pin and say that was really lucky, like $7,000 in video poker. But they're also, if you look at it in the broad spectrum of our lives, I mean, this whole thing about living, the whole life that we're given is just kind of lucky, you know?
Yeah. Do some people, Tony, seem to attract luck, good luck, better than others?
Again, I think in terms of, you know, if you look at specific situational things, there's the guy or the woman that's the lucky guy or the lucky gal. They seem to have everything. They have the style and the look and the personality and the charm and all of those things, and they seem to, you know, bring people to them, and everything seems to be great with them. But that seems, for me, that's kind of situational specific. And there are people that just, you know, all of us, many people just view their lives as kind of ordinary lives. But I think in each of these, the lives that we have, there are so many things that we're to be thankful for, and that you can truly, if you look at it hard enough, say that, gee, we're all lucky, you know, in that respect, that we were able to live these wonderful lives and have families and kids and things. And, you know, that there's just so much luck out there. For our lives, that yes, you can look at a guy and say he's really lucky, but you know what? I think you can look at individual lives, and even though at first blush they may seem ordinary, when you step back and look at them from hindsight of, you know, the whole spectrum of their life, you could say, you know what? Geez, he's a lucky guy,
yeah,
too.
See, I don't think someone like Bill Gates is lucky. I think he was good at what he did.
I mean, it's hard to say. I think, you know, in terms of success and what he did for society and his wealth and all of that, we can step back and say that's lucky. But he's a bright, bright guy. And, you know, a lot of that, and probably the bulk of it, is genius and hard work.
That's
so
right.
Did luck play a factor in his success? I'm sure there were certainly historical events that come together that create that opportunity, that he was there at the right time in the right place, and he was the guy who did that. So, you know, there's situational factors that contribute to right time, right place for a major historical event to happen.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of it's perception. A lot of it is being intuitive enough to know what to do and to be prepared for it.
You know, in the end, you look at these things and you say, some events are just bigger than life. And when you get to that point where you say, gee, it's bigger than life, then for me, luck plays a role, because it's not just one person's genius, or it's not just that one individual. It's just like a bunch of stuff coming together. And that, for me, that bunch of stuff coming together is really what luck is.
Let's go to Shirley in Monticello, Iowa. Hi, Shirley. Go ahead.
Hi, George. You know, I've been listening for some time, and I can connect to this heavily. I've been lucky all my life. Things have happened to me, and my son is my luckiest charm I have. My oldest boy died 6 times and came back, and he came to us whole.
Boy.
He was hit by a car at 90 miles an hour when he's only 7 years old. I thought it was a dog that got hit. I was in the house, and a friend of my mother-in-law's was come over, and she was trying to show me these childcraft books to sell me, and I said, I can't afford those. And I looked out, and I thought it was a dog, and here it was my son.
Oh, what
but
a feeling.
He died 6 times and came back to us whole. Explain that one.
That's more than luck. Some that's divine providence watching him there. What do you think,
yes,
Tony?
Yes, it is.
I do. I mean, we said it earlier that there are some things that are in the realm of miracles, like angels and that, and things that we can't fully understand about it. And, you know, that this is one of this falls into that category. Let me ask you, Shirley, how did that change your view of life? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Shirley.
Hi, my name is Roxanne Toshiko Tomiyasu.
Oh, how did that happen?
And,
hold on for a sec, Rox. the lines got crossed somehow, but that's okay. So, you know, for a little kid to get, you know, come back from death in death's grasp six times, that's beyond luck, isn't it?
Yeah. It's basically beyond understanding. And yet, in my mind, there is an aspect of luck to that. But it's just, it gets to the point where it's almost miracle and very difficult to understand it.
It sure does. But it happens, and you might as well go with it.
And what I was going to ask Shirley was just simply, how did that change her view of luck and life? And I'm sure that this, what we talked about earlier about the preciousness of life, that really is, that's in part luck.
Six times looking at death. That's amazing. Brad in Ontario, Canada, east of the Rockies. Hey, Brad, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Norrie, how are you?
Good, Brad.
Yeah, I was watching a news article about that child that fell, and what you guys failed to mention, the two people with the
box mattress,
they were trapped in the elevator for almost a half an hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, see, it adds to the plot, doesn't it?
What are the odds of that?
Yeah.
So what does that multiply the odds by, Brad?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think huge, right? I mean,
oh,
again,
yeah.
It'd have to be astronomical.
Yep.
Yes. Again, that's one of the sequence. Anytime you get a long chain of events leading to a certain outcome, and it's a positive good luck outcome, the odds just go up geometrically. And the report that I had read failed to mention the elevator, but gee, you know, you factor that in there, and it's a huge multiplier in terms of the odds.
Yeah, had that not happened, they would have probably not been there. They would have wrapped up whatever they were doing, and the little kid probably would have died. Just amazing. We go to Fred now in Santa Cruz, California. Squeeze you in real fast, Freddie. Go ahead.
Yeah, George, I've had 40 or 50 close calls with death during my life. I'm 67. One in particular, if you could help me get a hold of Paul Simon of Simon and Garfunkel, but I was coming in from R&R up in the Iron Triangle along the Cambodian border in 69, and I got a bunker. I couldn't believe it. Usually we dig holes and roll tanks over them. And try. But anyway, I bought this small little radio at the Bunker PX, and I put it in this bunker. I was staying in overnight. And I put it up in the hole in the bunker, and I'm on top. A mortar lands about, 50 feet away, 75, no big deal. And then the next one goes halfway to me, and that's how dumb you can get over there. You get lazy. Not lazy, but you got. So anyway, Paul Simon comes on with the song called The Boxer. So I had I reached up to turn the volume up, and four mortar rounds hit. Three on top of the bunker and one just outside. It ruined my thumb, ruined the radio. But I would have always wanted to meet with Paul Simon to tell him this story. And it's true. And if you could help me out, George, that'd be great.
All right, stay on the line. Let's get your number, and maybe Tommy can make some contacts for you. Saved by the radio, saved by Paul Simon. Tony, you take care of yourself, and let's see where luck takes us next time, okay?
Thank you so much for having me on tonight, George.
That's Tony Davidson. In a moment, George Ure joins me as we talk about trends, all kinds of trends, on Coast to Coast AM.